Blog Talk Radio.
Kingway, Fox, Beer, Locker's acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendy's dog, Ransom is very hard. Four drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher bad left, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak sat, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. With that incredibly awesome and fun-filled song, it's time for another episode of Trek Talking. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and boy, am I glad I'm here, and am I glad you can hear my voice, because it was touch and go for a little while there, but I made it over the hump, and here I am, and I'm excited about the show, and I'm thrilled to be going out to Las Vegas for the Star Trek 55-year mission to meet Charles in person. The one and only Leslie Hoffman is going to be sitting right beside me, and Ewok Karen, of course, who was just here talking to me about barbecues, of all things. We're going to be in Las Vegas, and if you're going to be there, please stop by the Trek Talking Table, say hello, get an autographed picture from Leslie, and hang out with us. I'd love to meet you. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce my Trekspurts. We'll start out with Eric. He's out in Portland. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing really good. And after hearing that Jim might have to cancel his trip out of west here, I went into a panic, and then he quickly corrected me and said, thank goodness, negative COVID test, thank goodness. Good doctor's visit. I'm going out west, so I'm so happy for you, Jim. I'm excited to talk about this movie because I know there are some differing opinions on this movie, and I am ready to banter.
It's going to be fun, and also I got to talk to Charles, who is currently out in Las Vegas, where I am going to be landing on Tuesday morning. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing good. We got to talk about your schedule if you're doing Tuesday. Doing good, kind of tired. It's been a busy day at work. For those lucky enough to say, oh, yeah, we're going to school around Labor Day, it's like, yeah, we're not. We start on Monday. And we got a lot. We got a whole bunch of computers in rooms that we're trying to get rid of. So I've been hauling a lot of computers around.
Sounds like fun. So, guys, just to fill you guys in a little bit, I have been really sick, and I called the doctor, and the doctor says, it sounds like you have COVID. I'm like, oh, no. And they wouldn't see me until I got a test, blah, blah. It was a nightmare. Turns out I don't have COVID. I have an upper respiratory infection. He gave me some incredible drug and cleared me right out. In fact, I didn't think I'd be able to do the podcast tonight because I couldn't even talk. But you're hearing my voice, so he cleared me and said it would be safe to fly. It would be okay to go out to Vegas as long as we follow the protocols that are set up. So we're going to Vegas, baby. We're going to hang out with Charles. We're going to be at the convention. We're going to be broadcasting live. You'll be able to hear live from Las Vegas, and we're going to do it on Thursday from 7 to 9 my time, which will actually be Charles's time because I'll be where Charles is. So it's going to be a lot of fun. You guys want to check that out without any further confusion. So we have a really fun show for you guys tonight. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Generations. And, not one of my favorite Star Trek movies. We also have fan shout-outs and Star Trek birthdays. We have some news on Section 31, Strange New Worlds, and Tom Paris is back. Or is he? So you're going to have to hang out to find out. Anyways, I'm psyched to be here with you guys. And I just want to let you know that I'm holding in my hand right here, right now, a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD. And I want to give it to you, okay? Star Trek Season 3 of Discovery is currently on DVD in limited edition steel box. The must-have collector's features all 13 episodes and includes over 2 hours of special features, including deleted scenes, behind-the-scenes featurette, cast interviews, and a gag reel. Own Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on Blu-ray and DVD now from CBS and Paramount Home Entertainment. Or you could simply call 646-668-2433 and win it. It's very simple. Okay, I want to send it to you. I'm dying to send it to you, but you have to call, okay? You got to let your fingers do the walking and call Uncle Jim right now, 646-668-2433. And you'll win a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD. So we always start off the show with our around the globe numbers. And for that, we turn to Eric. Eric, what's going on with our global listeners?
Oh, my gosh, Jim. We are all over the place, and it seems a new normal has been reached here. You know, as always, about 75% of our listeners come from the United States, and thank you to the 35,000 people who have downloaded our podcast and to the 59,000 people who have liked us on Facebook. But here we go, Canada holding on to that number one spot with 6.13% of our international listeners. Wow. I mean, of our overall listeners, but they are, of course, from outside the United States. That is amazing. So Canada has definitely taken the torch from the UK, which is pretty awesome. We thought maybe last week was a numerical anomaly, but it turns out this is the new normal. But, you know, the UK hasn't given up. They are still in that number two spot. They are holding down 4.76% of our listeners, just up a skosh from last week. So thank you very much to the folks in the UK. In our number three spot, holding steady, Australia, the folks down under, 4.53% of our listeners. That is also up a tenth from last week. But, you know, not to be outdone moving up the scales, Ireland still has 1.86% of our listeners. And for such a little country, that is pretty cool that almost 2% of our listeners come from Ireland in and of itself. So thank you so much, folks in Ireland. And finally, rounding out our top five international countries, we have Norway with 1.61% of our listeners. So thank you to every single one of our listeners, whether you come from the U.S. or whether you come from somewhere else on this big old marble we all live on. We appreciate every single one of you, no matter what language you speak and no matter how you listen to our podcast. It's amazing to have you along for the ride. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And we also like to break that down, countries and cities. So, Charles, what's going on our top cities list? A little bit of changes.
Well, definitely there must be a lot of bouncing going on around in the top 20 and 30. Indianapolis, Indiana, near Shannon, was 32nd last week. They're now at 35th. Portland, Oregon dropped from 23rd down to 22nd this week for Eric.
Go Portland.
And Las Vegas went from 16th this week to 18th. So there must be a lot of battling in those numbers. Well, last week, Houston joined the top 10. Well, San Pablo, Brazil, not allowed to be in the top 10. And they regained their 10th position. And then this week, it looks like the rest of it stayed stable. Brisbane, Queensland, Australia, still 9th. San Antonio, Texas, Chicago, Illinois, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Los Angeles, California, Sydney, New South Wales, Australia, Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, London, UK, and New York City. So Jim was worried there was going to be some bumping up near the top 10, where it didn't end up happening this week, but you never know week to week where the bounces is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, it can happen at any time. And that's determined by you guys. You guys go to our Facebook page, give us a like, give us a follow, and make those numbers bounce around for us. So, you know, we heard the countries, we heard the cities, but now we want to hear from you. So every week we give individual fan shout outs to people just like you. And how you get a fan shout out is you go to our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond, spell that all out, and you'll see the Live Long and Prosper symbol, and just drop us a note and tell us where you're listening, where you're from. Every week I pick 15 lucky fans. If you see a heart next to your name from Trek Talking, that means yours truly, Uncle Jim, has chosen you, and your name will be called out on the next podcast. So, Eric, why don't you get us started with our fan shout-outs this week?
Absolutely. Our very first fan shout-out this week goes out to Arne Deutscher from Germany on the Baltic coast. So thank you, Arne, for listening to us all the way from the center of Europe right there in Germany. That's pretty cool. So thank you very much. A hearty hello and thank you very much going out to Haskone Bella Alexandra from Hungary, who gives us a little Live Long and Prosper icon. Wow, that's so cool. Somebody from Hungary. I do not remember calling out Hungary before. So maybe that's a first from that country on our top 15 here. So thank you so much, Haskone, for interacting with us on our Facebook page. We're also saying hello and thank you very, very much to Joao Alasemo Silva Serra in Alcoba, Portugal. Ooh, wow. Thank you so much for listening to us from South America. That is so cool. We've got top fan Miguel A. Sanchez from the Dominican Republic saying hello to us. Hello to you, Miguel. Thank you so much for listening to us. And finally, Adam Magiera from Poland in a town called, I think, Gdansk. That sounds very cool, very cool. Adam, thank you so much for listening to us from Poland, Gdansk. Charles, who's on your list this week?
Well, I'm going to start off with Liam England, Jerry Sanders from Rockhampton, Australia, top fan Luke Mora, Moira Luke from Bristol, Virginia, right off next between Bristol, Virginia and Bristol, Tennessee, where one of the big NASCAR tracks are. Ruin Six from South America. Tell that John Barker from Torby, UK. Jim, how about your list?
Well, I gotta zoom in a little bit because I'm old and blind and I have trouble reading on this little screen on my phone here. So let's make it a little bigger. There we go. So we'd like to say hello and thank you to Eileen Murray from Glasgow, Scotland. That's where my grandmother's from. I always love to visit there and see where my roots are from. So thank you for listening to us in Glasgow, Scotland. We'd also just like to say hello and thank you to top fan Richard Johnson, who's listening right now in Delaware. Thank you so much. We'd like to say kapla and thank you to Chris Duxworth from Brisbane, Australia. Good day, mate. And we'd also like to say thank you and live long and prosper to Cassandra Johnson, who's listening to us in Hayes, North Carolina, U.S. of A. And finally, last but not least, we want to say hello and thank you to Ralph Koch from Cologne, Germany. We couldn't do the show without you guys, and we really appreciate your support. So thank you so, so much. If you'd like to hear your name mentioned on a fan shout-out, just visit our Facebook page and tell us where you're listening from. If you see a heart next to your name, you want to tune in because you're going to get an individual fan shout-out. Thank you guys so much. Now it's time for our Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
No, it was not, but we like it anyways, Worf. And you know what? We always like to start off our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those members who are no longer with us anymore. And for that, we turn to Eric. So, Eric, who are we saying happy birthday to who is no longer with us?
Well, our very first remembrance this week goes out to someone, of course, from the TOS era. He played the character of Gorgon in the episode And the Children Shall Lead. His name was Melvin Belly. Of course, that character doesn't show up till sort of the end of that episode. He's kind of first shows up as this green shimmering entity and then eventually takes a little bit more form. But Melvin Belly would have had a birthday this week. So happy birthday, Melvin. We're also saying happy birthday and sending out our remembrances to Jack Blessing. He played the character of Agent Dulmer on DS9's Trials and Tribulations. He was actually a member of the Department of Temporal Investigations, which, of course, is a very interesting organization as far as I'm concerned, especially as it relates to Discovery and being in the 32nd century and things that we know happened during the Temporal Wars. So very interesting time, very interesting character. So happy birthday to Jack Blessing.
I learned some trivia on this one.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about the two agents. Agent what is his name?
This one is Dulmer.
What happens when you rearrange the letters? What do you get?
Interesting.
Mulder? Mulder.
Oh.
If you rearrange the letters of the other agents, you get Sully.
No way.
No way.
Our two agents are Mulder and Sully.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. That, Charles. That is awesome.
That is too cool. See, it's not only fun, it's educational.
Way to go, man. That's a good tidbit. Thank you so much for that. All right. Well, Jack Blessing, thank you for being.
Wow.
Good.
I was watching.
My mind has just been blown.
I was watching Seventh Rule, and they were talking about that episode, and they said, oh, by the way, there's two agents that are basically Mulder and Scully. I was like, wow, that's just incredible.
Well, Jack Blessing, thank you for being Star Trek's version of Agent Mulder. That is so cool. I love it. Well, we're sending out a remembrance this week also to Wendy Hughes, who would have had a birthday. She played Lieutenant Commander Nella Darren in TNG's Lessons. We're also remembering Paul Lambert, who played Melian in TNG's episode When the Bow Breaks, and also played Dr. Howard Clark in TNG's Devil's Due. So a couple of different roles. He's sort of an older gentleman. Yeah, I think you would recognize him if you saw his face. He's kind of somebody who shows up, as we said, twice in TNG. So would have had a birthday this week. Happy birthday also, and remembrance is going out to Theodore Marcus. Played the character of Karab in TOS's Cat's Paw, one of those pretty fun episodes. Karab is the bald guy with the sort of uniform or outfit, I guess, that has the big eye on it. He's one of those interesting people from that episode. So happy birthday to Theodore Marcus. Happy birthday also to Barbara Townsend. She played Admiral Rosa in TNG's First Duty, so one of those great TNG admirals. Was she evil in that episode? I don't really remember that one too much. You remember any lore on that episode, Jim?
She was grilling our beloved Wesley without mercy, rolling him around like a weenie on the Barbie because he was lying. And yeah,
that's pretty
I don't
good.
Know if she was evil, but yeah, Wesley lied. Right. He did something wrong. And he got caught.
and as well, he should have, as far as I'm concerned. So happy birthday also to David Bryan, who played the character of John Gill in TOS's Patterns of Force. And I have saved this one for last. Our last remembrance this week going out to the person Ted Cassidy, who has played a couple of different things in Star Trek. He played the character of Rook in TOS's episode What Are Little Girls Made Of? So think big giant guy with lots of makeup. Also in TOS's episode Arena, he was the voice of the Gorn. But Jim, I think Ted Cassidy is known for perhaps another role outside of Star Trek that we give him Star Trek cred, but where is he really known from?
Oh, come on. Everybody knows. Everybody knows this, don't they?
I think they do. Ted Cassidy is our good man, Lurch, from the original Addams Family TV series. The one and only Lurch, as far as I'm concerned.
You right.
That's pretty good. This is pretty good.
Which is funny because we're going to talk about another Lurch a little bit later on.
Yes, we are.
We have two Lurches to talk about. The second Lurch we're going to talk about never said, you right. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's odd, isn't it?
It is a little bit odd.
It is a little bit odd, but he also surprised me when I found out that he did the voice of the Gorn.
Yeah, I did not actually know that little tidbit, so I was interested to go back and find that out. And it makes sense. I mean, he's so distinctive, right? He's just one of those guys from that era that has that voice and that body and, you know, the look.
Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't have just had Bobby Clark do it. He was the Gorn. Charles, is Bobby Clark still scheduled for Las Vegas, or did he cancel? Do you know?
I haven't seen my list yet. I'll check after my birthday.
Yeah, I haven't checked. I'm kind of looking forward to meeting the Gorn. I think Arena might have been the first or one of the very, very, very first episodes of TOS that I ever saw, because I fell in love with the Gorn. I always loved that Gorn, and that episode was one of the ones that sticks in my craw. I think that might have been the first Star Trek episode that I saw. So I was kind of excited to get a chance to meet the Gorn himself, Bobby Clark. But I was really surprised when I found out that it wasn't him that did the voice.
Well, Ted Cassidy, at 6'9", he had that that whole like upper chest cavity that made all that deep resonance, which was really cool.
And you see, all the stuff that we've already learned on tonight's show. Wow.
There you go.
We're just hitting home runs left and right.
Boom.
Yeah, and Bobby's still on the guest list. I think he's one of them that usually gets in the dealer's room. He might not cancel as much as some of the others might.
I might pack my Gorn figure and have him sign it. We'll have to see how much room I have in my luggage. Anyways, guys, believe it or not, it is time for our very first commercial break. For you guys that are listening over on Odyssey Radio, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back after these very important messages. For those of you who are listening to us live or on any other podcast provider, you're going to hear a quick message from my buddy TJ over at Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York, right over the border from Vermont, where I'm sitting right now. And when we come back, Charles is going to continue with the birthdays. So don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after this very quick yet painless message.
This podcast is brought to you in part by the Freakopolis Geekery, the premier upstate New York comics and game shop. Centrally located between Saratoga Glens Falls, Ticonderoga, and Rutland, Vermont, the Geekery is a haven for pop culture and science fiction fans. For Star Trek fans, the Geekery features board games like Ascendancy, as well as awesome gaming titles like Star Trek Adventures RPG from Modiphius, Star Trek Away Team's HeroClix, and of course, Star Trek Attack Wing ship-to-ship tactical combat for the tabletop. The Geekery hosts casual play sessions, learn-to-play sessions, and sanctioned organized play tournaments with limited edition prize support. You'll also find comics and trade paperbacks at Freakopolis, including Star Trek titles from IDW. Lots of issues are in stock, and special orders are no problem. Whether you visit in person by shuttlecraft or beam in online to Freakopolis.com, you'll find yourself right at home at the Freakopolis Geekery.
And we're back. So who is on your birthday list tonight, Charles?
Well, let's start off with Susan Denberg. who played Madge in TOS's Mudge Women. I'm assuming she's probably one of the androids.
She was the blonde woman.
Then there's Michelle Bell, who played Crosser Zorn in the TNT episode Encounter at Farpoint. Fast starting our TNG era.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Wirtz played Lieutenant Commander Jack TNG episode Family and Violations and Journey's End. We've got Dr. Fresh's husband before he was killed in the incident.
Which I think is a thing that still kind of haunts Picard to this day. And actually, I keep hoping maybe they'll kind of bring it back up in Picard Season 2. We'll have to see.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, even the comics talk about that one.
They sure do.
Tony Rizzillo played Cannon in DS9 Duet. Played Haggis in DS9's episode Business as Usual. Molly Higgins played Elria in DS9's The Gem Hadar.
Yeah, she was the first. She was the first. Not the founders, Borda
yeah,
we get to see.
Exactly. Yeah. Before we get our Wayun, who we see over and over again.
Yes, before Wayun.
Javier Bau in Discovery's The Sound of Thunder.
Interesting.
Yes.
Daniel Day Kim. Say Gotan Rez in Voyager's Blink of an Eye. Dominic Bergeris played Mr. Zip in Picard's Star Rag City. Jonah Cassidy played Celeste in Enterprise's Home and Awakening. And his character is the mother of T'Pol.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
And finally on my last birthday is going to be a new one for us. And that is Agnes Murray, who plays the character Zero in the up-and-coming series of Prodigy. So we're already getting birthdays from the Prodigy characters already.
Yeah. So guys, we have a caller on the line. So let's see if we can give away a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD. What do you say? Before we up our birthday. Yeah. Yeah, I love talking to fans. Let's see who we got on the line here. If I can get this thing to work. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talking. What's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
It's Nate from Vegas. Do I win a second one?
Woo! Yeah, you get two.
No, he doesn't get two.
Nate gets two.
One for one winner each.
I got all excited for Nate.
I ended up calling in because my internet went down. Good old Cox Cable, so I couldn't listen to the show anymore. So I was like, "Crap, I got to call in now."
There you go.
Hey, did you get your Discovery? Did it come in the mail?
I did, but it didn't look like a steel case to me.
No,
it looked like a normal DVD case.
Yeah, normal DVD. But you got
but
it right.
You said it was a steel case.
Yeah, well, you take what you can get, I suppose, when they're free, right?
False advertising. The company sent you the wrong stuff.
those sons of bitches. But yeah, so you don't get a second one. You only get one. So
okay.
There.
All righty.
so you know know what? It was a false alarm, guys. It's not a real caller. So we still have time for discovery.
Nobody important.
Winner.
Yeah. We still have Star Trek Discovery Season 3 to give away. You can still win it because Nate doesn't get two. So you can call us at 646-668-2433, and you can win a copy. Give us a call, and I'll ship it right out to you. So we're going to continue on with our birthdays, and the first one on my list is Melanie Shatner, and she's the daughter of Jean-Luc Picard. And, anyways. Yeah, I get senile. She is the daughter of Captain Kirk himself, William Shatner. She played his yeoman in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. And she wrote a really interesting book called Star Trek V, Captain's Log, The Making of Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. And it's a really interesting book on the insights of what goes into making a movie, in particular Star Trek V. And it's got a lot of behind-the-scenes pictures in it, and I really enjoyed it. So happy birthday to Melanie Shatner. We'd also like to say happy birthday to Bridget Brana, who played Ruby in the Enterprise episode First Flight. We'd like to say happy birthday to Richard Fancy, who played Captain Satlick in the TNG episode First Duty. He's another one of those admirals that was grilling Wesley like a weenie on the Barbie. He was a Vulcan, though. So, he grilled them a little bit differently. But happy birthday to Richard Fancy. We'd also like to say happy birthday to Leslie Ackerman, who played the K-7 waitress in the DS9 episode Trials and Tribulations. Great role. Was funny. I thought she really came across really well, bringing that role back to life. So happy birthday to Leslie Ackerman. We like to say happy birthday to Nemia Persoff.
Good job, Jim.
I think I butchered it. He played Taylor Kopp in the TNG episode The Most Toys. He's the guy that had the body piercings and the jewelry that went through his nostril and out his lip and had that weird looking body piercing thing. You'd recognize him if you saw him. We'd also say happy birthday to Jeanette Arnett, who played Dr. Karen Lowe's in the DS9 episode, Statistical Probabilities. Now we're getting down to some of my favorites. We'd like to say happy birthday to France Nunn, who played Alain Dolman of Alas in the TOS episode, Alain of Troyes. I swear she was a Klingon. She acted like a Klingon, except for the tears that would make you fall in love with her forever. She was a Klingon through and through. I think she would have given the Duras sisters a run for their money. So happy birthday to France.
Yeah. She definitely had that attitude and kind of like the face that never changed, right? Just like that look.
Yeah, I thought she was awesome.
Yeah.
And now we're getting down to some good ones. This next guy happened, if you've ever listened to the podcast before, this guy was at my wedding. And I have a picture on our Facebook page posted of him standing with me and Karen at our wedding. And I'm like up to his armpit and Karen's like up to his waist. And he's just towering above us. Incredibly nice guy. Nicest guy you'd ever want to meet. He did play Lurch in the Addams Family movies, but he never said, "Uray." He did play the piano, though. The organ, but they cut it out of the movie. I don't know why. But anyways, we know him as Mr. Hom from Star Trek The Next Generation. And, of course, I'm talking about Carl Striken. So happy birthday to Carl Striken. Not the original Lurch, but still a Lurch nonetheless.
And
last,
interestingly,
but,
Jim, 3 inches taller than the original Lurch because Carl Striken is a 7-footer. Boom.
Yeah, he was a big guy. When he walked into my wedding reception, everybody just stopped and turned, and the hotel band started playing the Star Trek theme song. It was one of the greatest. It was incredible. He walked up to our table. You know, when you're at a wedding, the table, the bride and groom's table is up on, I don't know, a pedestal, I guess, in the front, and he walked right up to it. Even on the pedestal, he was like eye level. It was. He's a big guy, but he's so nice. Such a nice guy. And last but not least, one of my favorite characters on Star Trek Discovery. I thought she was great as Captain Killy. When she had that straight hair and that gold body suit or whatever, incredible. I loved her. And, of course, we're talking about Mary Wiseman, who plays Sylvia Tilly on Star Trek Discovery. And the Tilly book written by Una McCormick, phenomenal. We reviewed it on our Book Nook show. And if you want some background on the character of Tilly, I recommend that book. It's really great. And so happy birthday to Mary Wiseman. I was thinking about meeting her at Star Trek Las Vegas, but I think she's canceled. So I won't be meeting her. But I may be meeting her at the Edison, New Jersey Sci-Fi Summit because she's still scheduled to be there, and Trek Talking will be there as well. So we'll have to wait and see. So it's time for Star Trek News.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program.
Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Yes, that means it's time for Star Trek News, and I'm going to start out this week. All the stories that we're about to talk about, I've kind of broken them down, but you can read the stories in their entirety on our Facebook page. So the first one is entitled, Section 31 Confirmed to Be in Development with Michelle Yeoh Attached. How did you get in here? How? Get down. Where was I? AJ got in here somehow. It had to be the wife when she was talking. When she was talking to me about the barbecue, he must have snuck in. Anyways, Viacom CBS released a press announcement confirming the new deal with Secret Hideout Alex Kurtzman to continue the current era of Star Trek series under his guidance. And the announcement that the long-rumored Section 31 is finally in development with Michelle Yeoh attached to star. The press release says that Star Trek Strange New Worlds is getting a 2022 release date. And as it's mentioned, in the same breath as that announcement, one can allude that Section 31 is also getting a 2022 release date. Strange New Worlds will likely debut in the winter around January or February, while Section 31 could be out as late as November or December of 2022. That said, shows have been known to have their premieres pushed back due to one reason or another, so 2023 is also possible for the release date. And with COVID, that could change even more. So I hope that they still have Ash Tyler on that show, and I hope that we see a lot more of Laurel, because I really like what they did with that character and what Mary Chifo brings to the role. So we'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric, what do you have to tell us about?
I've got a great article too. It's interesting, Jim. I wonder, maybe on a future show we'll talk about the extension of Kurtzman's contract, because I know that's been a little bit of a point of contention amongst our Star Trek community. But that is, to me, I'm excited that Section 31 is coming out and that kind of project is pushing forward myself. So good times there. My article here, Doug Jones and Anthony Rapp preview. What's in store for Saru and Stamets in Star Trek Discovery Season 4? The big news in the season finale was Michael Burnham being promoted to the rank of captain and given command of the USS Discovery. That left a bit of an open question regarding Saru's status. Speaking to StarTrek.com, Doug Jones did offer some clarity. Quote, I've still got some captain status with Starfleet, Jones disclosed. The question for Season 4 will be, where do they plug me in and how? You'll see a tug in Season 4 between home and his duties to Starfleet, teases the actor. I think Saru's longing for home is something any of us can relate to, how nostalgic we've all become for relationships, family, and friends. Those things have become even more important to us in a world faced with peril. I think you'll see these seeds of Saru wrestling with that, the idea of being tethered to home during Season 4. The actor also again hinted that there is a budding romance with Saru and a character introduced in Season 3. If you look at another episode in Season 3, you'll see that he meets President Tarina from the planet Navar, which is formerly Vulcan, and his heart goes a little bit flutter-flutter over her. So if there's a romantic interest, that's probably going to be President Tarina from Navarre. Very, very interesting there. Anthony Rapp revealed season 4 allowed him to work more with an actor he didn't get much time with in season 3. Quote, I think I can say that one of the exciting things for me is that I get to have some really nice moments with David Ahala, who is a fantastic person and a wonderful actor, but we were on a very different track in season 3 when he first came onto the show, so I may have had one moment where we even were in the same room, but that's about it. But in season 4, I get a nice extended sequence with him, working with him on something, and that was just a total pleasure to get to spend some time with David and to watch his wonderful work in person. Stamets is working his butt off in season 4, I can tell you that much, trying to help save the universe again. Anthony Rapp confirms the family connection with Adair and Gray will grow in season 4. Quote, yes, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that one of the cool things about season 4 for Adair and Gray is that they get to spread their wings a little bit. They have their sea legs now, so you get to see them in their own right and not just simply as a piece of the family puzzle or being overseen and tended to in that way. So I personally am very excited about the sort of future for both of these characters, particularly interested in what they're going to do with that Saru character and, you know, bringing, I assume, more of his Kelpian culture and that sort of stuff into it with the character whose name I cannot remember right now from season 3, the Kelpian guy.
Sukal.
There we go. Sukal. Yeah. Yeah. So pretty cool article there. Charles, what you got?
Tom Paris. I remember they played from Star Trek Lower Decks season 2. There's a real project coming soon. One of the vital surprises in the Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2 trailer was an appearance by Star Trek, and McNeil is back to voice the character who appears in an unusual way. As a plate, there is a moment with a frantic Brad Boimler looking at Jeffrey's cube, talking to a commemorative plate featuring Tom Paris alongside an image of the USS Voyager. Returning home from 7 seasons of the Delta Quadrant at the helm of the Voyager must have made Tom Paris a bit of a celebrity. Having a plate or even speaking to it isn't out of character for Boimler fanboy. However, the plate speaking back is a bit out of character for dinnerware. What is also surprising, announcement that the Tom Paris commemorative plate was being developed as a real product. Each plate is 8 inches in diameter and will come with a stand. There's no detail in pricing yet. Pre-orders will open up on August 11th, one day before the season 2 premiere. Fans can register interest at StarTrekUnlimited.com.
Charles, are you going to get a plate?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
It was kind
I
of
wonder
about
if,
you. Yeah, go ahead.
You think they'll have them on display at Star Trek Las Vegas?
They might.
I mean, I just, that was such a moment in Lower Decks that they are, you know, will be such a moment in Lower Decks that I got to believe that it's going to become a thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So the next story is entitled Strange New Worlds is Bringing Back T'Pring. The last time we saw T'Pring, Spock's bride, was in the season 2 episode of Star Trek The Original Series, A Mock Time. T'Pring wasn't interested in being Spock's wife, so she demanded the Kalafi, which is a battle between Spock and the champion she chose. In the end, T'Pring ended up with Spahn, the purebred Vulcan she wanted, and we never saw or heard from her again. Actress Gia Sanru has been cast in the 3 episodes of the series, appearing as T'Pring. Fans were quick to respond that in the original series, Spock had not seen T'Pring since they were children. So if she returns in Captain Pike's time period, it will essentially retcon what Spock had divulged in A Mock Time, unless they use her in such a manner that Spock doesn't see her, which could happen. It's entirely possible we'll see an episode where we get to meet T'Pring before Spock sees her again. So that isn't necessarily a mistake with the timeline or canon, just have to wait and see. Well, I need to correct that episode because I watched that episode last night in preparation for the show, and Spock never says or hints at anything about when he last saw her. He says they were betrothed as children. That's right. Not the same thing as saying we haven't seen each other since we were children. So I think some fans are getting out of proportion, getting ready, I don't know, to attack and hate everything. But in the episode, it is never said, hinted at, or implied the last time Spock saw T'Pring. So that's not violating anything in canon that had been pre-established at all if we see her with Spock prior to that episode. But I did notice something strange about that episode. Since it was their wedding, where were Spock and Amanda? Sarek and Amanda. Sarek. Why wouldn't Sarek have been there at that point? I don't know, but
Actually believe that Sarek wouldn't make it, but I wouldn't believe that Amanda wouldn't make it.
Just a little sidebar. But I'm really excited to see what they do with that whole character and the whole Spock and her thing. And maybe we'll see a young Stan as well. They didn't mention it, but maybe. Who knows? I love Anson Mount, and I can't wait to see the show. I'm so psyched about it. And Eric, you got another good story here for us.
Oh, my God. I got all kinds of Anthony Rapp this week, which is awesome. Anthony Rapp on Stamets balancing science and family in Star Trek Discovery Season 4. At the end of Season 3, Stamets got into conflict with Burnham in a serious way. And that challenge, is that a challenge, being that she is the lead character and supposed to be a hero? This is a question asked to him. How do you play that dynamic without coming off as the bad guy? And Anthony Rapp says this: it's not my concern about coming off as the bad guy or not. My concern is to try to find the truth of the moment. And if you're a person in life and you're having a really intense confrontation with somebody, even if you love and respect them, if you really told the truth, I don't think you'd be looking inside yourself and going, I don't want to be a bad guy here. You're just reacting. He is responding. He, Stamets, is responding. I was very grateful that Jonathan Frakes was the director of that sequence because he's such a sensitive and present and character-driven and story-driven director. When I read the script and I saw those scenes and then I found out Jonathan was directing, I was very relieved and grateful. I felt like we would be in excellent hands. So yeah, it's just a matter of diving in and going for it and then trusting that he would say, okay, can you just sort of recalibrate this moment a little bit? Having that trust and safety with him made all the difference. So another question, the final scene of the season is celebratory with Michael as captain and everyone in their new uniform, but you are sort of the odd man out and don't seem happy. Was that in the script or a personal choice, or did it come from the director? And he said, yeah, it's a personal choice. I don't think Stamets would say, Michael, you cannot be captain, but something happened between us that was painful, and it's hard to be like a super cheerleader, rah-rah, in a situation where there's some lingering pain. But it's not an insurmountable pain. It's not forever, we can never be close again pain, but it was painful. So it makes sense to me that it wouldn't be like, I'm going to be cheering you on right now. And that was supported by Olutende Osiname, who was our director of the finale. And I didn't want to make it like, oh my God, I'm going to kill you, but it's a subtle thing. It's hard for me to be like 100% totally happy right now. So I think that is kind of interesting because I really feel on Discovery that the actors who have been cast in this show are trying to come at these characters not just from the standpoint of what's written in the script, but really thinking about the underlying kind of motivations behind these characters and developing the characters themselves and then presenting that on screen. And this is a good example. Here Anthony Rapp makes a personal choice because he thinks that that's what his character would do. And that's probably why newer Star Trek in Discovery maybe feels a little bit more human, not quite as utopian, but a little bit more kind of just like how people might actually react to things, which I think is pretty interesting. So great article. You should go read that full one on our website as well. And Charles has
I just wanted to.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I just want to take it because we only have 2 minutes until we got to take our next break. So, yeah, so I just wanted to say that I thought that scene that he's talking about with Jonathan Frakes directing, that's the scene where Michael Burnham shoots him out the airlock there.
Yep. Yep.
And he's pleading with her. And that scene was just phenomenal.
It was great. And I still don't know how I feel about it. Like, I think the best scenes in Star Trek, you don't know how you feel about them when they are over. And I still don't know, like, did Michael do the right thing there? I mean, I don't know. Very, very.
Yeah, cool. I mean, you can't let crazy green woman there, Osira, get her hands on Stamets.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, the show is over. It was a really good scene. And Jonathan Frakes, I got to say, every episode he directs, he's incredible. And I think Anthony Rapp hit the nail on the head. So that's excellent. Anyways, believe it or not, it's time for another commercial break. My God, where did the time go? We start Trek talking and just having fun. I'm still holding in my hands a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD. And yes, you're right, Nate. It is not Blu-ray Steelbox, but it's still on DVD. And I want to give it to you. So you have to call us at 646-668-2433 and say, hey, Uncle Jim, I want Discovery Season 3, and I will drop it in the mail right off to you. And you also get a Trek Talking refrigerator magnet. What'd you think about that one, Nate?
I got a refrigerator magnet? Is that what those were? I thought they were business cards.
Well, there's one business card and there's one refrigerator magnet. You got one of each.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, pretty cool. Anyways, give us a call, 646-668-2433. You can get a business card, refrigerator magnet, and copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD. Don't touch the dial. Don't go away. We got one more great story, and then we're going to dive into Star Trek Generations. And we just got to hear from a buddy of mine. Here it is.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but your time is finally here. You can feel the change in your thoughts right now. Nothing's in your way, and they're not gonna hold you down no more. No, they're not gonna hold you down, 'cause we've got faith, love your call. We wanna hear what you have to say. We've got faith to believe in Trek Talking today. You've got faith in your fingers. All you gotta do is dial now. You can reach us right now. We've got faith. We've got faith. Faith that you call.
And we're back, and that's right. We have faith that you'll call 646-668-2433 and win yourself a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD. Speaking of Discovery Season 3 and speaking of Star Trek Generations, what do you have to talk to us about, Charles?
Well, this was an interesting one that caught me, personally. Viacom CBS has made Paramount Plus the primary focus of its business, and this summer has greatly expanded its offering of feature films, especially films produced by Paramount Pictures. As of June, all six original Star Trek feature films, along with all four of the Next Generation films, were included in Paramount Plus. Latest, Star Trek Beyond was also added in June, with Star Trek Into Darkness added late July, leaving the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek film was the sole film not to be part of the streaming service. However, as August rolled in, instead of the film catalog finally being complete, all of the TOS and TNG movies disappeared. The six movies and all but one of the TNG movies are now available exclusively on AMC Plus streaming service. Generations also left Paramount Plus, but is now not available to stream anywhere. In July, Paramount Plus did offer some warnings of the films had a limited time on sending out a tweet saying that you could stream them until the end of the month. So as of now, only Beyond and Into Darkness remain on Paramount Plus. Now, correction this article, it is available to rent on Amazon, but it is not streaming for free on Amazon.
Did you double check that? Because I actually went to check Amazon for Generations and it could not even be rented the other day.
I thought I could rent it, but I was trying to figure out where I could find it and end up saying, okay, I give up. Instead of paying for it, I've got the DVD in my collection.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because in the age of streaming rights, all kinds of weird things are going on because streaming didn't exist when a lot of these contracts were written. And in fact, Disney just lost some movies like that as well, Disney Plus, due to streaming rights. So hopefully Paramount Plus can get them back relatively, you know, whenever this contract expires. And have Star Trek back, because it was great to have all of Star Trek in one place, albeit briefly. But
it was very short, right? That was the thing, was it was like, it was 2 months. We had everything in one place, and that was it.
And now it's gone. So
now it's gone.
Yeah, let's hope they remedy that and get it back.
For Eric, there are two different versions of Star Trek Generation. There is the one with the ship, I think it's the Enterprise D on this cover. And there's one with the Shatner, Picard, and Data on the cover. The one with the three actors is available for rent. The one with just the ship is not available for rent.
Okay. Well, there you go. Weirdness in the age of streaming.
Yep. It's very weird. So anyways, guys, we're talking about Star Trek Generations, and it was a good lead-in.
Jim, before we go into Generations, I wanted to say something real quick.
Absolutely.
Okay, so according to the Khan's website, the only two Discovery actors still coming are Mary Wiseman on Sunday only, and Mary Chifo is coming. She is going to be there throughout the convention. So those are the only two that are still going to be coming to the convention. So you'll get your chance to meet Mary.
Mary
and Laurel.
I think a couple of other actors are going to be in there on Sunday because there's supposed to be that D&D game on Sunday with the Discovery crew.
Oh, interesting.
Well, those are the only two Discovery crews still coming.
Interesting. I guess we'll find out when I get there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, guys, we've been talking about Star Trek movies. We've been talking about Star Trek Generations. If you haven't seen it in a long time, it's understandable. But if you'd like a quick reminder of what it was all about, here's the trailer. Maybe. What's wrong here? There we go. Live radio.
In a distant corner of our galaxy, a secret observatory is attacked. A brilliant scientist is found. And a mysterious ribbon of energy where past and future collide is unleashed.
It's a doorway that we call the Nexus.
Every ship which has approached the ribbon has either been destroyed or severely damaged.
Obviously, they were looking for something.
There's still no indication of why they attacked the station.
I must return to the observatory immediately.
There's nothing I can do.
Timing is very important in my experiment.
The hell's he doing?
I have an appointment with Eternity, and I don't want to be late.
Someone doesn't care about weapons or power. He just cares about getting back to the Nexus.
The star is going to collapse in a matter of minutes.
That'll destroy everything in this system.
Population?
230 million, sir.
Why would he destroy a star? I have to stop him. But I can't do this alone. I need help.
I know someone who can.
You say history considers me dead.
Who am I to argue with history? You're a Starfleet officer. You have a duty. I don't need to be lectured by you. I was out saving the galaxy when your grandfather was in diapers.
Now, the torch of adventure is about to be passed.
Eliminate them.
Klingon vessel decloaking directly ahead, sir.
Target their bridge! Fool disruptor!
Let's go!
Bridge, we have a new problem! All right, let's move them out. Let's go. Take them out.
10 seconds to warp core breach.
All hands, break for impact!
Let's try and cheat death together.
Warp one, engage!
Star Trek, Generations.
Yeah. So, Star Trek Generations is the seventh film in the Star Trek film series franchise. Malcolm McDowell joins the cast from the 60s television show Star Trek and the 1987 spinoff The Next Generation, including William Shatner and Patrick Stewart. Generations was previewed in the United States and Canada on November 17, 1994, and grossed $3 million. The film opened to the worldwide release the day after and grossed $23.1 million. During the opening weekend, it was the highest grossing film during the first week of its release in the United States, staying in the top 10 for 4 weeks. The film went on to gross $118 million worldwide against a $35 million budget. Given its modest budget, Generations gross was considered a success. Star Trek Generations earned mixed reviews from critics and fans. The film holds a 47% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. On Metacritic, the film has a score of 55 out of 100 based on audience survey. Generations was conceived as a handoff from the original cast of the Star Trek films to the cast of The Next Generation. After developing several film ideas concurrently, the producers chose a script written by Ronald D. Moore and Brannon Braga. Production began while the final season of the television series was being made. The director was David Carson, who previously directed episodes of the television series. Photography was by franchise newcomer John A. Alfonso. Filming took place on the Paramount Studio lots and on location in Valley of Fire State Park, Nevada, and Lone Pine, California. Is that anywhere? Is that anywhere near you, Charles?
Sounds like a place.
I lost track as I was doing something.
He was asking about the Valley of Fire. Yeah.
I don't know where Lone Pines, California is, but I know where the Valley of Fire is.
Cool. Is that someplace we could visit while we're out there for the convention? Or is it far away?
Not during the convention.
No?
It's going to be way too hot to be. You really want to go to the Valley of Fire in the summer?
It's 110 degrees right now, Jim, at 5:30 in the evening.
Well, it's 62 here. All right. Okay.
Fire.
A novelization of the film written by J.M. Dillard spent 3 weeks on the New York Times best-selling list. Tie-in merchandise released to promote the film included collectible cups and calendars from Jack in the Box and action figures. Due to production timelines, these figures wore the Blackman-designed Starfleet uniform that were ultimately unused in the film itself. Dennis McCarthy, the principal composer of The Next Generation, was given the task of writing Generation's score. McCarthy became the first Star Trek composer to work on both television and film projects. The soundtrack was released in 1994 in a two-disc format on GNP Crescendo Records. In 2013, the soundtrack was re-released as a two-disc expanded collector's edition to include previously unheard tracks. Charles, what do our fans have to say about Star Trek Generations from our Facebook page?
Okay. Well, by the way, just to let you know, Jim, It's currently, I look at my current temperature is 107. It's around, might be up to 110 where Nate is. It's 114 in the Valley of Fire.
Wow.
At 5:30. That's ridiculous.
Welcome to Vegas, baby.
Yep.
Brad Anderson of 1011. Now, the idea of the Nexus is ridiculous. The way Kirk died was dumb and contrary to how Kirk predicted he would die. Giving it a 2. Roseanne Tanier Taylor. I didn't like the way Kirk treated Picard when they first met. Too condescending. I didn't like the way the writer's brother and nephew, basically making him into another Kirk in the Picard crewmate because he's only family. What is wrong with the Enterprise crew being Picard's space family and his brother, sister-in-law, nephew being his Earth family? Why did they have to make Picard a lonely old man who will die alone? Saying she was generous and giving it a 4. Boris Seltzer, 10, because it was my generation of Star Trek on the big screen for the first time, and I was young. Robert Mathis, I was not crazy about this film. The crew and the character development didn't transfer well onto the big screen for the first TNG movie. It was almost awkward to watch. The next one was much better. Plus, Shatner was so that -3 right off. He's a bad actor, giving it a 4. Dominic Sharp gave it a 10 because it was epic. The two captains and the cool starship in service. Top fan Jesse Crawford gave it a 7. Not a bad movie, but nowhere near the top of the Trek film. 3 years use of the BOP explosion from Undiscovered Country left a little sour note on what were otherwise solid effects. The story itself was good, but had some major plot holes. Top fan, Efren, the movie in 8. It was one of my favorites, definitely. Data gets his emotion chip installed. Good time. David James Allen gives it a 2, only because it's Tuesday.
I love that one. I absolutely love that one.
Alex Palmer said, the captain of the D was a nervous screw-up, and the D got it settled base handed to them too easily, giving it a 5. And Eric Keenan Bon, my problem with the movie is they tried to do too much, giving it a fan scores, totaling it, giving it a 5.9.
Which is a little bit higher than the 5.5 that it's rated. So our fans are pretty close to what the consensus was. So that's cool. A lot of people made some very valid points in what they said. And it's great to hear from our fans as well, so that when we talk, you know, start talking about it, you know, we know where we compare and where we fall with the fans. And I'm gonna start by saying that when I talk about Star Trek movies and people always want to grade them and rank them and whatnot. And I have my top 3 favorites and I have my bottom 3 least favorites and everything in between. And I don't specifically number them as 8, 12, you know, 11, whatever, because my moods change, you know. Sometimes I want to watch Star Trek 4. Sometimes I want to watch Star Trek Beyond. It depends on what my mood is. But my favorite movies and my worst favorite movies really don't change. And I'm going to tell you right now, Generations is my least favorite movie of all the Star Trek movies. I hated it. I think it's terrible. It's the movie I never watch. I pulled it out and watched it just for this podcast, and my eyes started to bleed. I hate it. Okay. I hate it. And I'm not going to get into why, because it's not important. I just don't like the movie for various reasons. My biggest problem with it is Next Generation was such a phenomenal TV show. And I think that maybe they were rushed because we were still getting over watching The Next Generation and All Good Things Wrap. And here they dropped the movie on us. We didn't get a chance to get over TNG not being on television, and boom, here's a movie. And it felt very rushed, and it felt like they cut a lot of corners, and it felt like the crew of TNG could have done so much better than what they were given. And Kirk, I don't feel, was needed in the movie. I feel they wrapped up the TOS crew in Star Trek VI perfectly with the signatures on the screen, and I was happy to see them go. And I wanted to see TNG take over the reins and run with it. And that's not what I got. I felt that Shatner being in the movie dragged it down rather than brought it up. And it could have been so much more than what it was. So I did not like the movie. It's my least favorite movie. And fans, I'd give this movie, I don't know, a 4. A 3. Yeah, so that's my take on it. How about you, Nate?
I actually like this movie. I loved seeing the Enterprise B in action for the short-lived time that it was. It's the only film that I don't like of the Next Generation ones is Insurrection. All the rest of them I enjoy quite a bit. So, but of course we had to have the Enterprise get destroyed one more time. We always have to destroy an Enterprise in movies. Mm-hmm. So, but then that brought us the glorious E model. So I enjoyed it. Yes, you're right. It was six was a great send off to the original cast. I don't fault you for thinking that. With the signatures and everything, but I enjoyed this movie, and like I said, Insurrection is the only one I can't stand of the Next Generation ones. That one is the bottom of my list. That's probably ranked 0 out of 10 for me for Star Trek.
Now don't be doing that, because we haven't talked about that movie yet.
You're giving out spoilers. Just saying this one was bottom of the barrel for you. I'm telling you, Insurrection is my bottom of the barrel.
So you don't want to spoil it for our listeners, then they won't tune in to hear what you have to say.
Well, I'm not
going to
tell
you
anything about it then. I'm just telling you it was my worst one.
Okay. we can handle that. And how about you, Eric?
I remember when this movie first came out, going to the theater, super, super excited to see things up on the big screen. And I will say that I did enjoy it the first time around. Of course, the big movie sequences, like the destruction of the Enterprise and that sort of stuff. And as Nate said, the Enterprise B stuff at the beginning. So I'll say that the first time I watched this movie, I really enjoyed it. And I've watched it a few times since then. I think as time goes by, there are more things about it that I wish were a little bit different. I wish John Harriman wasn't such a weak captain. I mean, why would they ever put somebody like that in charge of a ship named Enterprise? That seems like he just wasn't ready, you know?
Well, he wasn't actually going to be captain until Tuesday. This was
prior. He was in charge. They just didn't have photon torpedoes yet, man. Or a tractor beam.
Yeah.
Here's what I will say. I think people criticize the data emotion chip stuff, and I will tell you that I love the data emotion chip stuff. I love that he wants to push it even farther than he ever did during his 7 seasons on TV. And, you know, Geordi is there. His best friend is there to help him install it, to help take him through 10 forward for the first time, to help him kind of like go through that experience, not for the first time. I mean, he's experienced the emotion chip before, but the first time he kind of like decided that he was going to go for it of his own volition. And, you know, there's the scene where the chip kind of overloads and he gets that ridiculous laugh that he does. The movie really allowed Brent Spiner to kind of exercise his chops a little bit. I mean, I thought he was really good as Data. You know, what would Data be like if he was afraid for the first time? What would Data be like if he tasted something awful for the first time with an emotional response? So I'll say that's probably one of my favorite parts of the movie is the Data emotion chip stuff. I did feel like the Klingon sisters were sort of thrown in there a little bit. You know, don't get me wrong, I love Lursan Bator, but, you know, why do they have this deal with Thorin? I mean, they're making some money off of him for some transport. They want some information on the ultimate weapon, Trilithium, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. They were the least convincing to me of kind of the major storylines is why they would be here. But let's talk about the Nexus. So, Jim, I think Jim hates the Nexus.
I want to say, when this movie came out, we went to see it, and we had this big philosophical discussion. Maybe you guys will remember, on TNG, there was an episode that had a cosmic string and a cosmic filament, and now we have the Nexus. So is the Nexus bigger or smaller than a filament, or is it the same thing as a string? And if so, what's the difference between a string and the Nexus and the filament and a Nexus? We could get into this for the rest of the night, but that was one of the biggest things that we were discussing, is what makes the Nexus so different from a cosmic string or a cosmic filament, if you remember those episodes.
Yeah, I do remember.
So listen, guys,
I
got to tell you, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to finish talking about what's the difference between a cosmic string, a filament, and the Nexus. Don't touch your dial. Run, don't walk to the bathroom. Pick up your phone and call 646-668-2433, and you can win a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3 on DVD right now. And you can tell us what you thought about Star Trek Generations. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Trek Talking. All things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30. All hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking, boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And we're back. So, Eric, what is the difference between a string of filament and a Nexus?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the difference between a string and a filament is, but I do find it a little bit odd that there is a roving band of energy that sort of goes through the galaxy that seems to pick up human life, or not even human, because it picks up an Elarian too. So it picks up things with life signs, I guess, and takes them to their happy place. And then they kind of contradict themselves a little bit in this movie because if you think about it, the cosmic string comes, right? Thorin destroys the star. You see the string go through the planet first, and then you see the planet destroyed by the star blowing up, which means, theoretically, in my mind, every single person who's on the saucer section of the Enterprise should actually end up in the Nexus. But in fact, when Picard meets Guinan in the Nexus, she says that she's just an echo of the Guinan that was there from, 80 years prior to that. So I don't know, just a little bit of sloppy writing around the concept of the Nexus. And don't get me wrong, I will tell you that I absolutely love the scene where Picard, I don't like the spinning on the merry-go-round because that makes me dizzy. But the rest of the Christmas scene where Picard realizes he has 5 children and his wife, and he just is so content and he's got that smile on his face. Patrick Stewart just totally nails that part of, how Picard would react to that. Because despite what happens on Captain Picard Day, he does like kids, right? He did want a family, which is why he's so devastated when Renee and his brother are killed towards the beginning here. So I love that storyline, and I love the Christmas scene. It's just kind of like the way they mix it in with the Nexus is a little bit weird. So I want to give Charles some time, but let me just – I'll give you like a couple of other cool things I love. One of my favorite humor moments, the life form scan. I know some people hate it. When that happened on the screen for the first time, I just laughed out loud, and I couldn't help it, and it still makes me laugh. I think they handled Data's humor kind of clunkily in the last two movies, like you were saying, Nate, Nemesis and Insurrection are not great movies. And Data is not really that awesome in those. And then, you know, Kirk. Jim, I got to agree with you. Kirk, unnecessary in this movie. I had written down, you guys have all said it, so I was going to not talk about it too much, but I totally agree. Perfect send-off in 1991. You know, he says the straight, you know, second star of the right straight out until morning. And then he does the captain's log, that kind of a hands literally like the monologue at the end, literally hands the torch off to, you know, to people in the future who will discover all the undiscovered countries that are left out there. So why in the world they felt like they had to bring him back just to intersect the two captains? I do not know. So I'm kind of up and down on this movie. I really, really like parts of it, and I think parts of it are total Star Trek and really cool. And then part of the writing is just like, well, how does this actually fit together? But, you know, when I sit down to watch this movie, overall, I still enjoy it. And I still think it's better than Star Trek V. Sorry, Jim. So I'll give
That's
it
cool.
a so I'll give it a 6.5.
And how about you, Charles?
Hard to really keep track of not what hasn't been talked about. I will mention that I think a lot of the scenes on the final planet were a little farther deeper into Death Valley. But they actually took about 12 to 15 foot length of that bridge. Metal bridges in there, and that actually still exists in Death Valley. It takes a little bit to find it, but it is out there. If I get a chance, maybe I'll post a couple pictures of it on the Facebook page. I did get a chance to go see a little bit of it, which was interesting. I agree with Eric. There's some plot holes in this one and some twists that weren't necessary, but it's still an interesting movie. I had forgotten that Guinan, we got a little bit of an origin story to Guinan. You also do realize that this Picard losing his family was a tie-in to eventually him after becoming admiral and then resigning to moving in back to family property.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a bit of a connection to bringing card series into play. But I constantly remind the fact that Guinan's got a very interesting story that we don't understand. But she's got a lot in her past. It was interesting to see the bee in action. Yes, there's a lot of jokes, the fact it's ready. Well, the ship wasn't ready. The ship was going out in a, let's go take the ship out for a spin and show the public what's going on with the new ship series.
Mm-hmm. The news.
Because you got water porters hanging around. They bring the old crew aboard to these passengers. And they only brought a few people signed up to actually do the movie. So we got to see a little bit of the new bee, which otherwise we would not have seen anything of. Yes, the captain was a bit of a bumble. He probably shouldn't have been captain. He kind of gave us a little chance to let Shatner shine for a little bit.
You know, in his defense, yeah, and he does actually volunteer to go down to engineering and do the thing that needs to be done before Kirk's like, no, I'll do it. So, you know,
yeah.
He at least, like, he wasn't a coward.
Nope.
He just didn't know what he was doing.
He didn't know what he was doing, but the ship never really got his maiden voyage of really testing himself as a captain. He got thrown into a situation. Because all they was doing was demonstrating to the news media about the new ship. In fact, he did jump in a QZ at several times when they were busy trying to interview just comments from crew people. And he jumped in and made some positive responses about the ship. So I think he might have been a good future captain. They shouldn't have ever sent the ship out, really, on a event. It's like, oh, it's the only ship out there. It's like, why aren't you getting more ships closer to Earth if you're going to do something like this?
Well, and
it always seems like we always get that plot point. Oh, we're the closest ship around. It's like,
yeah,
where are all the rest of these ships?
Every time.
They're staying away from Earth. Let me guess, we're worried the Borg may come near Earth to Earth eventually. So we got to keep the ships away from Earth.
Yeah, I was going to say there is one interesting Harriman story out there if you guys are interested. IDW did a comic called Star Trek Captain's Log. And I think they did maybe half a dozen issues or so. And one of the issues they did was a John Harriman issue. And you kind of, it gives his character a little bit more depth, like not extreme depth, but, after you read that comic, you like him a little bit more. You don't think he's quite the weak sauce that he appears to be, in this movie.
The character is also in a, Star Trek fan film. Star Trek fan film. I don't remember what it's called, but both Michelle and Walter are also in that fan film.
Oh,
and Harriman has a beard like he's from the Mirror Universe, too, in that fan film.
I think that's Of Gods and Men. I think that's the one. Yeah, that is cool. I forgot about that.
Yep.
Well, I will say, I think... I'm not going to sit there and evaluate the best and the worst of the movie, but I think this is probably one of our weakest villains in the series.
You think so? Like weaker than Nero? Or not Nero, but what's his name? Shinzon?
They may be rather tied together.
I mean, I see what you're saying, Charles. They don't give him much to work with, but Malcolm McDowell is driven. Like, he's obviously driven, you know, and he's smart. I think that comes through. I'm curious as to what makes him seem like a weak villain. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just curious.
Well, how many people want to sit there and not only double-cross Klingon, but you're basically kind of getting in there to double-cross the Duras sisters, who were a bit intimidating themselves. But he just... Yes, his main motive was trying to deal with getting back to Nexus.
Yeah.
That just seemed like his only goal was, okay, I got to work my way to get there no matter what.
Yeah, he's really
no
convinced.
I have to step on to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
but to sit there and say, oh, I'm going to sacrifice planets just to get to here.
I mean, I think he's interesting in that he is the opposite of Khan, because I think Khan has this concept of I'm doing this for the good of humanity, even though it's kind of a twisted way of looking at it. But he, like, that's the genetic Superman kind of outlook is, you know, I'm doing this for the good of everybody else. Soren is doing it all for himself. He's 100% all in on his own. And it's almost like the Nexus is a drug. And it's almost like this is the length that somebody will kill hundreds of millions of people to experience this endless, this drug of endless bliss.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting concept to me, and I think it gives him a good motivation to be a bad guy that is not a bad guy that we've seen before. I mean, we see like Klingons and stuff just trying to go for their own, you know, glory or whatever, but I don't know. It's interesting. It is interesting. He's a totally different kind of villain from ones that we get,
yeah,
you know, in the past or future.
I guess that's a good way of saying it. He's a different kind of villain.
Yeah. It's cool.
He's a, not quite, but a little bit like a Q-type villain.
Yeah, I love that he's an Elarian that is not a good listener.
So I guess this brings me back to my biggest problem with this movie. What the hell is the Nexus? I mean,
well,
if Guinan is still in there, so
no,
let's use Guinan.
She's an Echo.
So she's an Echo, but here's the thing. She's on Earth with Samuel Clemens in Time Zero. So she's living on Earth, right? Then at some point in time, the Borg destroy her home world. She is on her home world at some point because it's said in the movie that the ships are carrying refugees from the planet after the Borg destroyed it. So she ends up from Earth's past into the future on the ship in the Nexus. And then she's a shadow, which means she left the Nexus at some point. So where did she go? How did she get there?
No, once you're
in the Nexus, she's an Echo, but an Echo of what? And
so,
does that mean that Sorin is still in there as an Echo, and Kirk is still in there as an Echo, and Picard is still in there as an Echo, and all the people on the planet are in there as an Echo?
Right.
I mean, it just, they never really explain what this,
as well. Yeah.
They never told you what this Nexus deal, it was, you know what it was like? It was like a fancy holodeck, basically. It's not real.
All right, Jim. According to Memory Alpha, this is what the Nexus is. It was an extra-dimensional heaven-like realm in which one's thoughts and desires shaped reality. Inside the Nexus, time and space has no meaning, allowing one to visit any time and any place that one could imagine. The doorway to the Nexus was a violent, destructive temporal energy ribbon which crossed the galaxy every 39.1 years, and they were listed here 2393, 2332, and 2371. So there you go. It is a temporal energy ribbon is what a Nexus is.
Yeah.
Okay.
The answer to your question, really, Jim, is that the movie was written so inconsistently when it comes to the Nexus. None of us actually knows what it is or what. Like, at first, when you start to think about it, you think you might get it, right? You're like, okay, so the Guinan that he sees, that Picard sees, is the past Guinan. You can tell because she doesn't have her purple uniform on. She's got the outfit on that she had on back when she was first pulled into the Nexus. Okay, got that. Now, how does Sorin arrive in the future the first time? Well, they find him on the station, right? They go to the station and they dig him out of the station. And at that point, he's already been in the Nexus once. So they just don't explain how he or Guinan get out of the Nexus. Now, as for the Echo, I think maybe everybody leaves an Echo behind because we also know that theoretically, everybody from the saucer section, which included Guinan, because we saw her in 10 Forward, should her actual person self should have been in the Nexus as well, but she clearly says that she's an Echo. So, you know, it's a little inconsistent, but it seems like maybe people in the Nexus produce Echoes no matter what. This whole idea that you can go to any time or space, though, if Picard goes back to, like, 5 minutes before, like, when did you choose a better time?
Well, you know, because Kirk jumps over the cliff with the horse 100,000 times and says, this isn't real because I have no fear. So, therefore, the whole thing would be like being on a holodeck.
But you know what, Jim? The one thing that they bring up here that actually plays into Picard, and Picard says the line in here, I've got it written down here somewhere. He talks in this movie about the fact that human beings are defined by their mortality. And I think it's when he's talking to Kirk because, you know, Kirk is the one who realizes that he's got his, you know, perfect little cabin and he's got his eggs and bacon. And then he realizes that it's not real. And to Kirk, making a difference to other people is more important to him than living out infinity in his own bliss. And that's actually what pulls him out of the Nexus. So that's a nice moment for Kirk, because I think that's what Kirk would do. He wouldn't just fall as much as he wants to. He wouldn't just fall into the drug of the Nexus. He, you know, and Picard is the one who kind of pulls him out of it, right? He's like, damn it, man. You know, you want to make a difference, don't you? And Kirk's like, oh yeah, that's right, I do. Okay, let's go make a difference.
And then did you guys notice in the Christmas scene when his kids were playing, did you notice what toys his kids were playing with? Did anyone notice?
Well, the one was a ship. The one boy had like a ship that I think is, wasn't it one of the ships that you see during the credits of Enterprise or something?
No, he was playing with an alien bug hunter ship from the movie Alien versus Predator.
Oh, was he?
And I'm like, really? Really? My God. I mean, wow. Give me a break there, guys. You know? They just went to the toy store and bought toys off the shelf and put them in the movie. And I was like, come on.
Here's some
really?
Here's some more information from Memory Alpha. Apparently, Ronald Moore also talked about this. It says here, in an early version of the Generation script, Guinan explains that her experience in the Nexus and the Enterprise B are responsible for her sixth sense that lets her perceive people and events outside their linear time. And then he continues, Guinan, Saran, and other L-Orians are in some kind of transitional phase going into the Nexus when their ships begin exploding. The Enterprise B beams them away at a crucial moment that brings their physical bodies back but leaves behind some kind of echo, at least for Guinan. Whether or not Saran also left behind an echo was the subject of much debate and many rewrites, some including a Saran doppelganger, and some even including a meeting between the two Sarans in the Nexus. The momentary sensation of being in the Nexus leaves both Guinan and Saran with an almost overpowering desire to return. When Kirk pulled into the Nexus, there's no transporter beam to yank him away, and hence, he's completely left inside. When Picard and Saren enter the Nexus years later, they too are pulled in completely, and the idea of an echo should not apply since it was the direct result of a transporter fluke in a very specific instance. And that's according to Ronald D. Moore, who is a writer for, he was showrunner in Battlestar Galactica, but he's a writer from DS9 and such also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, helped with this script. So there you go.
Well,
awesome.
Thank you. I think that reusing the Klingon bird of prey from Star Trek VI was lame.
Oh, they do that all the time, Jim. They do that all the time in movies.
When have they done that in a Star Trek movie?
Well, not a Star Trek movie, but come on.
Well, all right, we're talking Star Trek here. I mean, it was from the previous movie. Like we all missed Star Trek VI and didn't see that. That just irked me. I was like, come on, really? But one of the biggest scenes that got me was when Riker. Well, the lighting in the movie is really weird. You remember the lighting in the movie? It was like they had no money, so they turned off the set lights. It's just weird lighting.
Well, they were trying to make the Enterprise look a little bit darker, so it didn't have that kind of like shiny bright look from the series. They were trying to make it look a little bit edgier.
So one edgy scene in particular, Riker's on the bridge of the Enterprise, and Picard gets the call, and he's in his ready room, and Riker goes into the ready room to tell Picard that the Romulan space station is under attack, and he walks off the bridge into the ready room. And when he walks into the ready room and Picard is sitting there looking at the pictures of his family, the bridge behind Riker, when he walks off the bridge, there's not a single light on the bridge at all. It's like walking out of a dark closet. Nothing. You don't see Worf. You don't see Data. Nothing. It's just absolute darkness. Like they turned all the lights off and said, we can't afford to light the set, so walk in out of the darkness. And stuff like that, just get under my skin, because Next Generation's better than that, you know? The other scene, when Kirk goes down to fix the deflector dish on the Enterprise B, you notice in that scene he's climbing up all this scaffolding and stuff to get to the deflector control? You know the scene I'm talking about? The reason why he's climbing up all the scaffolding is he literally is climbing up scaffolding from the construction crew because they were disassembling the sets from TNG and left it there. And literally he had to crawl on them to get to where he needed to go. When have you ever seen a bunch of scaffolding in front of the deflector control when Geordi was working in engineering? Never. I mean, stuff like that, when they cut corners like that and do stupid things like that on a show that's such a phenomenal show, I catch it right away and I'm like, oh no, are you kidding me? And yeah, the Klingon sisters, they didn't need to be there. And I love Lursa and Bator. They're my favorite Klingon. If I was ever going to get kidnapped by Klingons, it'd be them. You know, I want to go with the Duras sisters. But anyways, so Charles, what would you give the score? What would you give the movie as a score before we run out of time here?
I think I'll agree with Eric around a 6.5, maybe a 6.6.
6.6?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So listen, guys, we are going to be coming to you live from Las Vegas next Thursday. We're going to move the show up just a skosh. Instead of 7:30, we're going to be on at 7, my time. When I program the show here, it'll be 7. I'll be out in Las Vegas with Nate and Charles. So I'll get to meet these guys for the first time. We're going to hang out. We're going to do a live show. Don't know what it's going to be about because I'm not there yet. But we're going to try to bring the Las Vegas experience to you guys live right here on the radio. So you want to tune in next week. It's going to be a blast. Don't know what we're going to do, but it's going to be fun. That much I can guarantee you. So you want to tune in. Also, we're going to be doing a comic corner in the not-too-distant future. Right, guys? Didn't we decide we were going to do a comic corner?
We did. We've got some awesome Year 5 comics to review. I think we've got at least 3 that we haven't done, and I think a 4th might be coming out here in the next week or so. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so we're going to Comic Corner coming up, and we're also going to be talking, not next week because we'll be live in Las Vegas, but the following week, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Lower Decks, whatever the title of the episode is, I don't know yet. But Lower Decks premieres on the 12th, so we'll be talking about Lower Decks on our future shows. Next 10 shows, we'll be reviewing the latest Lower Decks episodes, so you want to tune in for that as well. We also have Rob Perlman scheduled to be on a podcast. I believe it's on September 2nd. I'm still working on that one, but you guys want to tune in and check that out as well. So we got a lot going on, a lot of fun stuff. I want to say thank you to
Hellboy?
Each and every one of you guys.
Hellboy's going to be on the show?
Yeah, he called me on the phone. Different Perlman.
Yeah, different
Perlman.
Not Ron.
Yep, totally different guy. And
oh, okay. But an awesome
anyways,
author. Okay.
Yeah, he's written some great Star Trek books, and we're going to talk about all of that September 2nd. So I want to say thank you to each and every one of you guys for listening, no matter where you are, for taking the time to tune in. And I want to say thank you to Nate for hanging out with us and sharing some of his insights on Star Trek Generations with us, and for being a lucky caller to win a copy of Star Trek Discovery Season 3. Thanks, Nate.
Yeah, thank you. I'm actually glad it's a DVD. I don't own a Blu-ray player, so I'm happy with it. just so you
good.
Know, I am definitely happy about it.
It worked out for the best. And I want to say thank you so much to Eric for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight as well. Thank you very much, Eric.
You better believe it. I had a good time. Thanks, guys.
And, of course, my very own right-hand man, Charles, who's in Vegas, where I'm going to be next week. Thank you so much for hanging out and Trek talking with us, Charles. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always fun.
It's a great time. If time flies right by, I kind of feel like I'm in the Nexus and it's just an echo of myself or something like that. See you next Tuesday. Yeah, that's the things we talk about, huh? Anyway, but the Mulder Scully thing blew my mind. I had no idea about that.
That was brilliant. Thank you, Charles. That was awesome.
That was cool. And of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. And please, if you're going to be in Las Vegas, if you're going to be at the Star Trek 55-year mission, swing by our table. We're going to be at a booth in the dealer's room. Leslie Hoffman will be with us signing autographs. I'll be there. Charles will be there. Nate, are you going to be there? Maybe.
Yeah, I got tickets. I got 5-day tickets, so hopefully I'll be there all 5 days. I guess Charles is going back to work, so he's probably not going to be there all 5 days, but I'll be there.
So you guys can meet myself, you can meet Leslie, you can meet Charles, you can meet Nate. So swing by and say hello. I'll give you a fridge magnet. How's that sound? They're pretty cool. I think you'll like them. They're neat. Anyways, I have a brand new microphone that we're going to be using at the convention, and it's going to be, we got a nice banner that we had printed up that's going to be hanging up behind us. We got 5,000 business cards to hand out. We got 150 fridge mags. So stop by, get a magnet, get a business card, and say hello. I'd love to meet you in person. So at any rate, guys, I'm your Uncle Jim saying thank you. Kapla. Live long and prosper. Stay safe. Be good to each other. Stop by and say hello if you're in Las Vegas. If not, tune into the show Thursday night and see what it's all about. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Night, y'all.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.